Hello, it's May 4th, 2025. My name is Simone, and this is a special edition of 90s Crime Time. Hello and welcome to this brand new special edition episode of 90s Crime Time. And if you're new to 90s Crime Time, welcome to the show. As always, I hope you all have had a wonderful week so far and are having a great weekend. And why is today's episode a special edition episode? Well, here in the States, the Mother's Day holiday is coming up soon, and I decided to play off this holiday a bit. And what I mean by this is that for the next two episodes of 90s Crime Time, you're going to hear about sinister mother and child relationships. And today's episode is going to be a shorter episode about children who kill, specifically their mother. And it's shorter because I could not find that much information about the case. However, I think you will still find it very interesting. And with that, let's dive in to today's special edition episode. The year was 1996, and in the Los Angeles suburb of Burbank, California, many people like to live here because of its suburban setting. Reports state that despite Burbank being only around 15 minutes away from the bustling city of LA, it had a quiet suburban feel lined with mom-and-pop shops and vintage stores, many of which were beloved by the locals. However, despite the small hometown feel, by the mid-1990s, Burbank, according to reports, was going through changes, meaning more development was on the table. By this time, Burbank had been home to Warner Brothers Studios and Disney Studios for a while, and they collectively produced classics such as Friends, Full House, The Lion King, Pocahontas, and more. Reports also state that the music scene in Burbank, while not as massive as it was in LA, was also reputable, mostly due to the many live music venues around town, found mostly in the city's coffee shops and restaurants. The economy of Burbank at this time was also excellent due to many of the residents here working in the entertainment industry, as well as aviation and high-end retail. And it afforded many Burbank natives a lifestyle to die for. This was definitely the case for one Burbank resident who worked as an executive here and who also had a family. Although she was said to have had a very decent salary, she was said to have lived modestly and her family never wanted for anything. However, in 1996, what she would come to realize was that not only did her family not want for anything, but someone in her family would take advantage of her and wipe out her existence. And when it came to light who wanted her gone, it would shock the woman's family and friends. In the following case, you'll find out who the victim was, the investigation, and the shocking aftermath in a case I title, Love, Obey, Kill. In the early morning hours of January 16, 1996, at a home in Burbank, California, 15-year-old Amy Bray was at home asleep. when reports state she heard loud noises around 5 a.m., and when the sound continued, she realized what she heard were gunshots. Amy, who lived with her mother, 42-year-old Dixie, and two siblings, older sister Amber and younger brother Ben, left her bedroom to see what was going on. But as the shots continued, she went towards the house phone to call for help. But reports state, curiously, she was stopped by her older sister, 18-year-old Amber. Shocked by this, Amy didn't have time to ask Amber any questions or confront her, so she went straight to her little brother Ben's room to try and protect him. Reports state Amy grabbed her 5-year-old brother Ben and took him into her room as the violence continued. And to try to shield Ben from what was going on outside the door, Amy turned up her TV to a static channel so it could drown out the noise. Meanwhile, outside the home, one of the family's neighbors heard the shots and called police. And reports state that when they arrived and peeked through a window of the house, they witnessed the shocking scene of a young man straddling and stabbing a woman. When they made their way indoors, the police ordered the man to stop, and he did without resistance. And when they asked who he was, he said his name was Jeffrey Ayers. And as Jeffrey was taken away from the scene, police focused on the female victim lying on the ground and later learned she was the matriarch of the family, 42-year-old Dixie Hollier, who later died from her wounds. According to reports, Dixie Lee Hollier was born in Los Angeles, California on June 7, 1952. Although not much is known about her early life, what is known is that she came from a loving family and she was known as very smart. Reports state that in 1982, Dixie began working at the big employer in town, Warner Brothers Studios, as a typist. But as she worked harder, she kept getting promoted in the industry, and by 1987, she was promoted to coordinator of special projects in the international division. And then by 1990, Dixie was promoted to manager in the same department. Reports state, though, outside of Warner Brothers, Dixie was a wife and mother who was reportedly married to a man named Tom Bray for some time by 1990, and together they had two daughters, Amber, born in 1977, and Amy, born in 1980. Reports also state, though, there were some cracks in the marriage by the 1980s, and the two separated. After the separation, Dixie was said to have dated other men, and in 1991, she gave birth to her son, Ben, who was reportedly not the biological child of Tom. Eventually, Dixie and Tom's divorce was finalized, but the two remained cordial and co-parented Amy and Amber well. Reports further state that although Dixie made a decent salary, times could be tough for her as a single mother, and money could be tight. On top of that, Dixie reportedly had some undisclosed health issues that racked up hefty medical bills. But her children came first, and she made sure that with her salary, they went for nothing. From all accounts, Dixie had a special relationship with all three of her children. But as years went by, she began to have a strained relationship with her oldest child, Amber. According to reports, Amber Marie Bray was born to Dixie and Tom in 1977, and reports state she was a happy child growing up, and she got along mostly with her siblings as they came along. She was also a straight-A student who, some stated, did her work so well that other students copied off her work. And she was a cheerleader, was faithful to her church's youth group, and sternly confronted her friends who smoked cigarettes. But sometime during high school, things began to change. No one knows exactly what got into Amber, but reports state that at some point during high school, Amber started skipping classes, shocking her close friend group, as she had no academic or behavioral issues that they were aware of, and they thought she may have just gotten bored with school. Not only that, but as she grew older, Amber started to miss curfew and stopped doing her chores, to the dismay of Dixie. Reports state Dixie and Amber fought frequently about Amber's rebellion, and Dixie wondered what went wrong. She tried everything she could to get Amber under control, like grounding her, but it didn't work, and Amber still managed to evade Dixie's authority. Reports state Amber was even more out of control as she started dating, and she would only usually date young men who were not in high school, to Dixie's disapproval again. However, Amber didn't care, and she continued to date men that Dixie didn't like, and continued to skip school. And her absences became so much that it led to Amber being declared truant, in which Dixie transferred her to an alternative high school. Here at the high school, Amber was said to maintain a low profile and miss class again, and she didn't have a lot of friends here either, if at all. She just wanted out, and for her, it was even worse that she had to go home to her mother and siblings, especially since she had to babysit her brother Ben often. However, reports state that by 1996, Amber, who was now close to finishing high school, met a 20-year-old man named Jeffrey Ayers, and after getting to know a little about each other, she took a liking to him. According to reports, not much is known publicly about him, except for, like Amber, he was kind of a loner, but he still had friends. Reports also state he lived rent-free with his mother, and after his grandmother passed a little before this time, he gained a small inheritance from her and lived off this while refusing to really work or pay any bills. However, what Jeffrey did do when he wasn't lounging on his mother's sofa was try his hand at many get-rich-quick schemes. Reports state Jeffrey talked to his small group of friends a lot about investing in 900-number telephone lines and other business ventures, which his friends thought were crazy ideas. But Jeffrey brushed them off. Also, when Jeffrey was not trying to make money, he would spend countless hours gaming on his computer and loved playing the game Dungeons & Dragons the most, calling himself G.O.D., which stood for Games of Destruction. Regarding his love life, reports state that either Jeffrey really didn't care to date much or couldn't get a date, and he always referred to dating as stupid. However, after he met Amber at a cafe in late 1995, Jeffrey started to reconsider his opinion on dating. As a matter of fact, he almost immediately became infatuated with Amber, and after they became official, he and Amber would spend almost every moment they could with each other. They would hang out at arcades, cafes, restaurants, etc., and according to reports, they seemed to be so smitten with each other that their friends noticed Amber talking about marrying Jeffrey, and she even had a list of guests and the wedding party. Amber even openly fantasized about getting an apartment with Jeffrey after she turned 18 and getting a job together. However, despite her fantasy, there was just one factor that kept getting in her way of fulfilling her fantasy with Jeffrey, and that was her mother, Dixie. When Dixie noticed Amber was getting way too close to Jeffrey for her liking, she did everything she could to keep the two away. and she openly talked to neighbors, family, and co-workers about her dismay. Then, of course, she and Amber would fight about the situation, but according to reports, as Amber got closer to becoming an adult, she wanted to really hear none of what Dixie had to say. She felt she was grown enough to make her own decisions, even though she was still living in her mother's home and had no job or money. When she would escape and tell Jeffrey about her feelings, she would complain about Dixie to him and tell him how unfairly she treated her. And she told him how great it would be for them if her mother was simply out the way. Meanwhile, according to reports, Dixie could sense something was brewing with Amber. Sure, they had fought a lot, but by late 1995, Dixie was scared for her life at the hands of Amber, especially since she had become even more erratic and snapped at the smallest things, like if she was asked by her mother to go to a store to get aspirin. And reports state that Dixie grew so worried that she sometimes talked to her neighbors about Amber's behavior, and that by December 1995, she had told one neighbor that she had written her last will. However, by January 1996, Amber and Jeffrey's friends didn't notice anything unusual with the couple, and witnessed a couple simply in love. But reports state the couple's friends would be shocked about the events that occurred to Amber's mom on January 16th, 1996. According to reports, after Jeffrey was confronted and removed from the crime scene at Dixie's home, he was covered in her blood as he was led to the police car. During his interrogation, he said he was Amber's boyfriend. And then, after his arrest, he pretty much confessed to murdering Amber's mother, and that he did it because he was worried Amber would take her life, because he said she told him that Dixie had been abusing her and he wanted to protect her. He later told police that earlier that night, he had made his way into the home and into Dixie's room on the second floor. Then he took his gun and shot at her 5 times. 2 bullets hit Dixie, grazing her forehead and shattering her upper right arm. When Dixie was able to run away and yell for help, Jeffrey said he began to beat her in the head with the butt of the gun. Then, as Dixie was on the ground on the first floor, Jeffrey said he grabbed a knife from the kitchen and began to stab her until he was interrupted by police. Police then questioned Amber and Amy told them that as she was trying to call 911, Amber pulled out the phone cord. Amy plugged it back in, but she said Amber pulled the phone out of the wall and ordered her to look after their brother Ben. Then she finished and said that as the attack continued, Amber barricaded herself and her siblings in the back bedroom until police came. When Amber was questioned, she corroborated what Amy said, but reports state that at the crime scene, police found something interesting. Love letters between her and Jeffrey. On these letters, there were mostly quote-unquote, I love yous written on them. But reports also state, police came across one letter from Amber to Jeffrey titled, Someday in November. And written on the letter, Amber said some interesting things, like suggesting that she and Jeffrey arranged to have Dixie and Amy killed while they took Ben out to a movie. Then she wrote, quote-unquote, I come here and discover them, call the police, and it goes on record as another unsolved homicide. Then Amber finishes the letter by saying that after her mother and sister were dead, she and Jeffrey could spend her inheritance. Police also found a response from Jeffrey to this letter that read in part, quote-unquote, your mother and sister will trouble you no more. With the discovery of these letters and the fact that Amy said Amber tried to stop her from calling 911, police looked at Amber as the mastermind and she too was charged with her mother Dixie's murder. However, when Jeffrey found this out while still in the interrogation room, he begged police not to arrest Amber and placed the blame solely on himself. However, police arrested Amber anyway, and she was charged with murder and conspiracy. Fast forwarding to 1998, Amber and Jeffrey were tried together in front of two different juries, with prosecutors opening the trial by saying the murder was intentional and carried out for financial gain, and that Amber was not abused by Dixie and simply used Jeffrey as a pawn to get rid of her mother and Amy if Amy got in the way. Prosecutors also chose not to seek the death penalty against the defendants because neither of them had prior criminal records. During their opening statements, the defense agreed that Jeffrey was involved in the killing, but that the motive was not financial gain, and that Jeffrey simply wanted to protect Amber from Dixie. However, reports state the jury did not buy it, and on February 5, 1998, Amber Bray was found guilty of first-degree murder and conspiracy to commit murder. The next day, Jeffrey Ayers was also convicted of the same charges. Both were also found guilty of committing the crimes under special circumstances and under state law. In May 1998, Jeffrey was sentenced to life without parole, and in July 1998, Amber was sentenced to the same time. As for Dixie's other children, Amy and Ben, after their mother's murder, they went on to live with other family members. The story of Dixie Hollier's murder comes from the sources of the Los Angeles Times and the San Diego Tribune. All right, I know that one was a shorter one, but I wanted to bring it to you anyway, and I'm just going to bring a short little opinion piece, very short, about what I think about this case. I do think that Amber used Jeffrey. I don't know, I can't say if she actually loved him or just saw him as someone she could use to get her mother Dixie out the way. I believe Dixie loved all three of her children. I don't believe she abused Amber. I think she just fought with Amber, as usual, teenage rebellion that got way out of hand. Amber didn't want to get her hands dirty, I believe. So she saw Jeffrey as sort of, I don't want to say a punk, but someone she could use to get rid of Dixie. She could lie easily and tell him that Dixie was abusing her, even though there was no proof that Dixie was abusing her. I don't know why she wanted Amber out the way. I guess in case Amber tried to get in the way, if Amy tried to get in the way, they would take Amy out and protect Ben. I'm not sure why they wanted to protect Ben. I guess she didn't want to kill everybody, even though she didn't like to babysit him. But she wanted to spare Ben, but remove Amy if by any means necessary, if she got in the way. Luckily, Amy did not lose her life to this tragedy, but their mother did, although Amy did try to call 911, and Amber stopped her and told her to go in the room and barricade themselves with Ben while it went on. I also read that during the trial, Amber had all her family in her corner, including Amy and their father, Tom, because they all believed that Jeffrey was the cause of this, and that Jeffrey possibly wanted Dixie's money, life insurance money, and that Amber was innocent. But all signs led to Amber planning this. She didn't throw away the letters or discard the letters or hide the letters, as she pretty much incriminated herself in this crime and setting up the murder of her mother and possible murder of her sister. It's so sad because she had a lot going for her. She was a straight-A student, cheerleader, kind of popular, even though she kept to herself. She was part of the church group. I'm not saying because you're Christian, you don't commit crimes. That's not true, obviously, at all. But she seemed to have, you know, everything going for her. And for some reason, something snapped in her high school days that she just was like, I don't want to do this anymore. I don't want high school. I don't want authority. I don't want any of this. I just want a man. I want my mom out the way and all this and that. And it turned to this. And unfortunately, Dixie, who from all accounts was a loving mother, lost her life at the hands of her daughter and her daughter's boyfriend. And now they are both in prison for life. But a fun fact, I guess you should say a fun fact, you can find Amber, who is now over 40, I believe, on a pen pal dating site if you like to search her. She's looking for love. So, yeah, so you want to look up for, if you want to look for love with an inmate who can never get out of prison, you should look up Amber Bray. And that's it. Thank you for tuning in to this slightly shorter episode of 90s Crime Time, and I hope you found it interesting. If you can and haven't done so yet, please leave a rating and review on whatever podcast platform, if that is an option. Also, please remember that today's episode is part of a special of 90s Crime Time that surrounds the Mother's Day holiday here in America. And next week, yes, I have it already written, is about a case of a mother who killed, and it will be intense. Stay safe and healthy, and I will see you very soon for a brand new episode of 90s Crime Time.